This is what happened one day when the NFT van stopped outside Dufty's house.
NFTs!
Said Dufty, and goes off to find Uncle Carl. Dufty always asks Uncle Carl to go with him to the NFT van. Oh dear, but Daryl Powell has gone off to the NFT van all by himself.
Ooh!
Daryl Powell has been knocked down by Wizzy Rascal. And all because he didn't have a couple of big props watching over him. When you want to go to the NFT van, always make sure you start the season with a winning squad.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. No, it's not Scroobius Pip, but Rob London here from What Would Brian Bevan Say? So with the UK still recovering from a heatwave, where are my two wilting podcasters? Firstly, he keeps his statistics in an icebox, his caveats in his chest freezer, ready to defrost a rant at a moment's notice. It's Sam Stanky.
Hello, hello, hello.
And also an old lad that needs an entire tube of deep heat to get him out of bed in the morning. No doubt he's been on the road again, travelling to warmer climes. It's Dennis Waywell.
All right.
What's the point? What is the point of doing this?
Well, just to, I've selected my background on Zoom today that probably represents what a lot of people have.
You've got your sculptured turds back, I see, Dennis. And Sam, I see you're drinking out of some new kind of beaker there. London Broncos.
Yeah, well, we've got to get ready for the championship, so I'm just planning ahead.
Oh, God. Oh, I need another coffee. Fucking hell.
Right, well, should we just crack on with this, boys? I mean, no one's going to listen to this anyway, are they? Let's face it. Everyone's given up.
I mean, who is listening to this now?
Because who is listening to this?
Yeah, it's hard work now, isn't it? I've just spent the weekend away, and I'm absolutely flabbergasted. I feel deflated. In fact, I imagine that this is what Daryl must feel like now. He's sat there.
Yeah, poor Daryl.
No, well, why don't we just record one match review where we take the lead and play quite well and then collapse and then just put it out every week?
I'll just put this on loop. That's what I'll do. Yeah. Every week, just put it on loop. Okay, come on. Let's roll up our sleeves. Crack on. Round 20. Hull KR. Not Hull Kingston Rovers anymore, are they? They've dropped that completely. I think they're just called Hull KR. They've gone to an acronym. The team was Thulis, some bloke called Minikin. Fucking no idea we bought him. Matautier, Wardle, Ashton, Ratchford, Williams, our marquee scrum half, Mulhern. Do I sound a bit patronising the way I'm doing this tonight?
Like, yes, you do. It's progressively getting worse as the season goes on.
Daryl Clark, Harrison, Ben Curry? Is he new?
Yeah.
No, you'll remember him, but I'll remind you about him later.
Holmes and Joshen Clark. Interchange bench was Bullock, Walker, Armour and McKaylee. There was no room for Nicholson or Wrench. Tries, two from Wardle, and McKaylee scored, something he hadn't managed to do in 66 NRL appearances. Ratchford kicked three conversions and two penalties. But with Warrington having led 14-0 after 18 minutes and 22-12, with only 14 minutes to go, they managed to concede 18 unanswered points to lose Warrington 22, Hull KR 30. Now, before we review, Sam went to the game. Here's his conclusion as he left the stadium.
So poor. So very, very poor. 14-0 and then 22-12 and still we contrive to lose. The moment this team is put under a little bit of pressure, they fold. They capitulate. They fold like a pack of cards because they do not have any resilience. Awful.
Capitulated, Sam. I like it.
Sam, just before you even go anywhere, I said to Rob, I said it must be bad if Sam's starting to use the word resilience. I mean, oh God, what does that say about everything?
Oh dear.
But they haven't.
What's the point of this? What's the point doing this?
I do think in that little monologue that you gave us, Sam, that you should have, I thought, instead of saying resilience, you should have said, we haven't got an ace in the pack. I thought that would have rounded it up, because you're using this, like, you know, pack of cards analogy, weren't you, for quite a while there. So if I was to say, let's put this question out there then. Who, even with, you know, Rob's patronising introduction of all the players, who is still our ace in the pack? So go on, Sam, give us your thoughts on that.
Still, you mean, who's our best player so far this year? Bloody hell.
Yeah.
God, that's hard, isn't it? Isn't that hard?
I know. Well, ace of the pack does push it to the, you know, the furthest extreme. It's hard to relate to, I know.
Can we not say who's our number 9 or number 10 out of a pack of cards? I don't think we've got an ace, have we?
Aces
high or aces low? Because if aces are low, we could pull out quite
this a few. Is rubbish. This is rubbish.
Who's listening to this, Rob?
Fuck knows.
So have we got any players that do, you know, that are sort of still saying, right, you know what, he's still showing up? What do you
think? What's going on in Scotland, right? Because I've been watching the Commonwealth Games and there was a triathlete with the...
Anyway, I think probably our best player year to date is... probably Chris Hill.
Chris Hill. Oh, brilliant. Okay, somebody who's left. I mean, I think, you know, what the guy who's been probably most consistent for us so far is Thomas Michaela.
Yeah, who's played like 3 games.
I feel quite sad, actually. I've gone way past ranting. Yeah, I feel quite sad because if I cast my mind back, they genuinely came out of the blocks after what had gone on the week before. They came out of the blocks like a house on fire. They really went for it. They dominated. And to be fair, 14-0 probably didn't do us justice. We were even more on top than that.
Right.
And then all it takes is a couple of little mistakes. We tried an attacking move where we'd been playing fairly conservative. We'd scored one great long-range try through a quick play of the ball and a bust up the middle. And then we got to halfway, and instead of kicking the ball in a conservative manner, tackling them on their own line like we'd done for the previous 16 or 17 minutes, we tried a fancy move to put Ashton away, turned the ball over, and suddenly they're attacking us. And the moment they're in our half, we concede. And then we concede again.
And it's like a revolving door, isn't it? Our defence at the moment.
As soon as we're under a little... If we're keeping them in their own half, we're defending quite well. As soon as we put under a bit of pressure in our own 20, collapse. And we did that with mistake after mistake. And that's what's frustrating me. We don't just do it once. We make an error and then we compound that error by kicking out on the bloody full and then conceding again. You know, frustration.
I don't get it because I only saw the highlights of Wigan Hull KR the other day.
Yeah.
Hull KR are shit. Like, they were absolutely dog shit against Wigan. Wigan made it look like they were playing some kind of schoolboy team.
Which is why I get frustrated so much, because we start well, it's clear what we need to do, more of the same. Just play strong, positive rugby, not flamboyant, just positive rugby, turn them around, make them come out of their own half. But no, we get a little bit ahead and we start to get cocky. We change what's working, and all of a sudden, we invite the opposition into our own half and back into the game.
Come on, Dennis, cheer up. He's slumped in his chair. He's got his
Who's listening to this? Look, I'm going to put a positive then. All right, because there's another player who I thought, oh, actually, I was a bit sceptical of, and now I'm coming round and thinking, actually, he's not bad, is he? So, Wardle, like you say.
Oh, very good.
First try, turn of speed, very nice. Mm. And then almost taking the piss on the second try, saying, look, here, Toby, want your thing back? Quick jump in the air, fifth tackle option, catch it, score a try. So he's another positive.
It almost looked like Wardle's been coached well this year somewhere.
Yeah. Our favourite coach.
Well, I've got a few notes, a few bullet points. Front row played well. I sent a message to Daryl. He came back and agreed.
Yeah.
Before I blocked him. Thulis put a kick out on the full and also dropped a crucial up and under.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
he's been
and actually after the one he, after the one he dropped, they then let the ball bounce on a couple of occasions.
Ashton gave a stupid penalty away by impeding a Hull KR player when it just wasn't needed.
Correct. Mm.
We switched off at a goal line dropout, and then we were caught offside. This is a staggering one, and I think it actually got worse yesterday, although we didn't start yesterday. Holmes played 80 minutes. Just 6 carries and 20 metres. He missed 4 tackles. Wow. Mm, Powell has started to sound like a broken record during his post-match press conferences. And why I haven't won a match this season when we've conceded the first points of the game?
Broken record, where's that from? Is that your analysis or is that someone else's analysis? Where's that coming
from? No, that's coming from me. I mean, we'll move on to Powell a little bit later, but
all right.
It is... You know.
When you look at the defence, and I've been looking at the defence, and I've actually got I've got the game playing here now.
Did you find the defence? Did you find it?
Well, hold on a minute. I'm like John Wells at the big screen, you see. I've just got to find the pause button now. Fuck off. Right. Anyway, so I've been looking at the defence, and the biggest thing is that I think we should look at the word we need is intensity. There's no intensity in the defence. There's just like, you know, they wrap a player up, they sort of like hold on to him, and there's like, you know,
passive.
I think in a good team, there's usually a third player that comes in and that's it, done, gone to the floor, he's on his back where possible to just start, slow it up a bit, this, that and the other. There's none of that, and you look at a lot of the missed tackles over the last like 4 or 5 games. The intensity of when they make contact and the follow-up in like 5 seconds or so of other players, you know, dealing with that situation, it's just not there. It really is not there. There's players stood around just looking, you know, sort of like, oh, he's got him, I'll just get back in the line. It's not intense.
No one's bending the back, are they? No one bends the back anymore.
No.
Well, meanwhile, while Wire lost valuable 2 points, their 2 closest relegation rivals were unable to gain ground, with Wakefield losing at home in Golden Point to St Helens, 12-13, and Toulouse losing in the south of France to Salford, 11-24. So nothing changed, Sam. We just stayed where we were. It was a wonderful opportunity to gain 2 points, and we just didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, you said it in your opening bit about this game. 14-0 up. And then 22-12 up. That's the moment that you seize the opportunity there to control you. I mean, we're still in control of our own destiny because we're ahead of these 2 teams. But we go 2 points ahead, further away from them if we seize that opportunity and the superior points difference. Pressure comes off, doesn't it? Instead, we collapse again and the pressure stays on.
Are we fit? Are we actually fit?
No. Well, I'm just going to shout down for a coffee because if we're going to be talking like this for another hour, I'm going to have a bit of a fucking boost.
Jesus.
Mrs. Maywell! Will you make me a black coffee?
He's full of himself, isn't he? Look at him. Absolutely full of himself. I got some stats after 19 rounds. Warrington's tackle efficiency is 92.3%. Mm. Wire miss a tackle every 5.5 tackles. Just to give some comparison to that, Warrington make a tackle every 14.2 seconds. St Helens make a tackle every 15.6 seconds. Therefore, Wire make an additional tackle in comparison to Saints every 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
But to flip that one around, Warrington offload every 410 seconds, whereas St Helens offload every 520 seconds, which concludes why make an additional offload in comparison to Saints every 2.5 minutes. So we're making an extra offload every 2.5 minutes, Sam, but we're also making an extra tackle every 2.5 minutes.
You got me thinking, what is our problem? And I looked at errors, and we're not making an awful lot of errors. I looked at missed tackles, and actually, we're not bad at missed tackles because we're only the eighth worst or fifth best, whichever way you want to look at it, in total number of missed tackles. Yeah. But we have made, according to the updated one this morning, which I presume has last night's on it, it may or may not have updated from last night, we have made more tackles than any other team in Super League, which suggests we are not keeping hold of the ball. Because if we're defending more, if we're making more tackles, we've not got the ball, which means we mustn't be respecting possession. And perhaps that is why we're knackered at the back end of the game, because we're tackling more than other people.
We look exhausted. That front row and second row look exhausted every week towards the end. I don't want to break the time frame continuum, but we'll move on to the next game in a second. There's no doubt about it. We don't keep the ball long enough. I said at the start of the year, I've never seen a Warrington team that gets so many options, so many little options of a second set of six. We never kick. We never put a grubber kick over the line and get a repeat set.
Well,
just something we don't do.
What I've just spoken about at the Hull KR game, we play so we start really well, we get on top, and then we give them the possession. And then in the following set, we give away a penalty. And then we concede. And then we kick out on the full and give them the ball back again. And we keep giving the opposition repeat sets, or drop, whether it be through dropping the ball and we put ourselves straight back under pressure, whether we're not alive at a short dropout, whether we're giving a penalty away. We are putting ourselves under so much stress, and that's stuff we can Warrington can control. Make fewer errors, keep your discipline better, you will make fewer tackles, the opposition will make more, the opposition will get more tired, gives you more option to go forward.
It's just not happening.
No.
Last year, my netball girls were lucky enough to have the Australian coach come down for a session. And all she wanted to teach them, she came over and she looked at our scores. And most weeks we might have been losing by 3 goals, or we might win by 2 goals, etc. And she looked through all this and she said, Rob, I'm going to spend the whole next hour with your girls doing time management. And all she taught them for that hour was time management, that when we were in front, we were controlling the game. And all of a sudden, every ball that went out, we no longer ran for it and brought it back to the opposition and gave them the ball and let them play on. We walked back with the ball. We had girls tying shoelaces. We turned a 15-minute quarter, I would say, because there's no stop clock. We turned it into about 9.5 minutes. Of actual playing time. And if you watch when Italy played England in the Euros...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and was it Liverpool lost recently?
Against Real Madrid.
Yeah. You know, the last 20 minutes of the game, when they're up, the ball's not on the pitch.
No.
And I remember reading Jimmy Connors' autobiography, and he said, and I mean, Connors won that many US Opens. I mean, he pales into significance compared to Borg and Borg's Wimbledons. But Connors always said that When the opponent hit a good shot and the crowd went up as one to cheer, he always took the attention away from his opponent by tying his shoelace or going to the net and having a drink of water. You bring it back to you. We've got no time management at all. Absolutely rudderless.
I think you've really hit on it there. Whether you'd call it time management or game plan or whatever, you've hit on it there. We're under pressure and we immediately put ourselves back under more pressure instead of thinking, right, how can we break this game? We're just a bit like, remember, I mean, it used to be horrible and I used to really hate it, but a team concedes a goal line dropout and somebody would be accidentally injured in front of the post, wouldn't they? And they'd take 30 seconds while the man ran on and gave him the magic sponge. And it just gave the team about to drop out 30 seconds to control themselves, to compose themselves. Now, we can't do that so much with a shot clock, but it's that sort of thing you're talking about, isn't it? Take a moment to gather your thoughts, to get organised, to...
I don't think there's anyone with the intelligence amongst that Warrington team to do it. The only one I see actually do it is Jason Clark. He seems to be the only one who is a little bit more level-headed and works things out occasionally. Yeah. Stands in the ruck a second longer, gets away with it. Vaughan does it at the Bulldogs all the time. But the rest of them, they just don't think they're that bright. What do you reckon, Dennis?
Well, I've got my coffee now, so I'm coming awake again. My question was going to be: is who's the closest Championship side near to Warrington?
Leith at the minute, I would say, or is it Widnes? No, it'd be Widnes, wouldn't it?
Ah, you see, here you go. So I've just been looking at it. Widnes 6.7 miles, Leith 9.9 miles. But if Leith are going to come up, then you're going to be left supporting Widnes, I suppose.
Okay, in the week leading up to Wyre playing Huddersfield, yet another signing had touched down at Manchester Airport in former St George and Canterbury fullback Matt Dufty. Dufty has arrived at Warrington on a 2.5-year deal after prematurely being released from his contract with the Bulldogs. The 26-year-old said, "The opportunity to come over to blah, 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 blah."
What?
The same as everyone says.
I'll just read this out, Matt. "My best footy is still in front of me. Blah, 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 blah. Fucking blah." Jesus. Can you tell I've had enough? Is this worse than 2002?
I can't think that far back. When was that?
We didn't have Wizzy Rascal in 2002, so probably not.
We didn't have the same money, did we? We didn't have a board of directors that were flush. How's it got to this?
Wow. You know, in a
well, in a right, way are we happy about Mr. Dufty coming in or what? What's the score?
Definitely. He has to add. I mean, he seemed to be... We'll move on to the game in a second, but just jumping ahead of the time frame continuum, he did seem to be able to tackle. Everyone was saying, oh, he can't defend. Seemed the best defender on the pitch yesterday.
Yeah, it's comparative to what the NRL are looking for. And what Super League are looking for. I'm quite excited about him. If his attitude is good, he has got great attacking potential. There was no problem with what he brought in attack in the NRL. It was just that he didn't match what they considered a top-notch standard for defence, wasn't it, really?
Well, on the day before Wyre ventured to West Yorkshire, both Wakefield and Toulouse had played again. Toulouse were soundly beaten at home by Hull, but Wakefield managed to win convincingly away at Castleford. Wakefield looked pretty good now, Dennis. They look to be on got a bit of a wet sail. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't get above us.
Yeah, well, they've had their ups and downs. I think they have had a few good wins earlier in the year, but there was only a point in it with Saints the other week, and then it's looking dangerous. And I know we keep texting each other saying thank fuck for Toulouse.
Alan London was on the phone to me. He thought that Wakefield just dominated Castleford in the forwards. Wakefield had a big set of forwards, did what they did against Warrington, controlled the game. Mm. Thank you very much. 2 points. Okay, on to the Huddersfield game. The team was then Dufty, Minikin, Wrench, Wardle, Ashton, Metoucher and Ratchford in halves. Mulhern, Darrell Clark, Armour, Ben Curry, Nicholson and Jason Clark. Interchange bench was Holmes, Bullock, Harrison and McKaylee. A quarter of the way through the game, Wire found themselves 8-0 up, following a nice pass from Dufty to a straight-running Wardle to score. Ratchford added the two and two more from a penalty. Huddersfield hit back with a try, but two more penalties from Ratchford's boot kept Warrington 8 points up, until Huddersfield scored on the stroke of half-time to leave a 12-10 scoreline in Wire's favour. Things looked to be going Warrington's way after the break, with Ashton intercepting and racing away for a try under the sticks, and it was 18-10 following Ratchford's conversion. The teams then traded a try each with no conversions, with Ashton going over in the corner for his second. But with Warrington leading 22-14 and with only 15 minutes to play and Bullock returning from the stint in the sin bin, Wire conceded yet again, 18 unanswered points to leave a final score of Huddersfield 32, Warrington 22. Should we just replay what we played before, Sam? We'll just put it on loop now.
Has anyone seen the Bullock sin bin? Was it a stupid sin bin? No. Was it well deserved? Was it harsh?
They were under, weren't they, under the cosh? Weren't we on our own line? And he just sort of did a professional foul. Or
I was slowly getting drunk at Chicken Fest, wasn't I? You see.
Chicken Fest. Tell us about Chicken Fest instead. What was your favourite chicken?
It was a Long Island Red.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That it. We've now scratched that surface.
We have.
Is that it? No debt.
And actually, they were all very nice until 4 o'clock this morning when the first light started to penetrate from the east, and I suddenly heard cock-a-doodle fucking
next 2.5 hours. Less of your penetration, Mr. Sankey.
Double entendres.
Powell said it's déjà vu. It's tough to take. There's a constant theme.
Try
it's
doing this podcast. Bit... That's exactly what people will be saying about this podcast.
It's a pretty tough period when you get a bloke binned. They had the ball 11 minutes more than us in the game. Probably going back to what you said before.
Sam. Oh, yeah, good point.
I thought we did some really good things at times. But we have to defend better. We just have to defend. Never mind defend better. You have to start by defending.
Oh, sounds like you should be at those interviews.
We're taking the piss a little bit, and it's obvious stuff, but what you said there is 100% correct, isn't it? It's a constant theme. It's weight of possession. They've got the ball more. We have to defend better. But the ... is, as much as we like him, Darrell, you're in charge, so you've got to correct these things. The players have, but it's under your direction. You've got to correct it.
Is he listening? Because we've got no other fucking listeners.
I send it to him every week. I mean, I do send it to him every week, and I get the thumbs up. He sent me a nice thumbs up last week. But
oh, okay, then. Well, let's be positive then. You know... I'm surprised, really, Sam, that, you know, from the stats arena, I mean, all we have to look at is the points conceded, isn't it? I mean, you know where the problem is for the past 10 weeks. It's the defence. Well, so surely, if you do nothing else but defence this week, I mean, which we did do against Hull, I suppose, a few weeks ago.
It's not just the defence. We only scored 3 tries, and one of them was in touch. I've slowed it down this morning and zoomed in on it.
Ashton's as soon as I saw it, I thought he'll be there on his computer, and he's spent about 3 hours looking to see if he's
not hard
in
to zoom in on things. Also, the week before, that the one that Wardle scored, the first one, if you zoom in on that and slow it down, it's a forward pass. It hits Ashton first and goes into Wardle's arms.
I sent you something yesterday, didn't I? And I've updated it. It's a second half. Including the Challenge Cup, our first half performance for 222 points against 231. So that's minus 9. So give or take, we're even in the first half across the season to date. Second half...
Sam, I think we've lost Rob. Look at him. He's had his arms crossed. He's just been staring at the screen, you carry on.
Drinking a sleepy bedtime mint tea here. I'm very happy.
Yeah. No, you don't. He's tense. I can see it. He's not going to sleep tonight.
Well, you see, I have to say, Sam, I don't think it is just that. I think there's players in this team that need pulling to one side and saying, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, not just up your game. Minikin's not good enough. Minikin is just simply not good enough. He should never have been bought. I don't get why we bought Minikin. He's done nothing in the three games he's played, apart from run out of the line and give tries away.
I think I'm going to get ahead of the time frame continuum.
Warning, you have broken the time frame continuum. Warning, you have broken the time frame continuum.
But I think we can touch on Minikin in a few minutes, because Daniel's got some comments about him, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Well, just looking at this team yesterday, Minikin's not good enough. Wrench, I don't know what's happened to Wrench. I was watching Wrench defend on that right side. He doesn't know whether to come up. He doesn't know whether to go back. Him and Minikin, I mean, you may as well not even be there. You may as well just say, come on, lads, in you come. Because they've got absolutely any idea what they're doing, the pair of them.
From starting the season really strong, he looks like his confidence has been shattered somehow. And he's hesitant, isn't he? He's all over the place.
Yeah. Ashton gives away just as much as he scores. Metautier, we'll come on to him in a second. Ratchford, nah, not good enough. Just not good enough to be playing in the highest level.
I would agree. Well, I would disagree with Ratchford not being good enough, but...
Orange alert.
Caveat detected.
Orange alert. Orange alert.
He's a good foil for someone who's outstanding. He's not the leader, is he? Never has been.
Oh, he kicks goals.
Tin foil.
Ben Curry.
God, you're listening to you two. You're so negative. Come on,
be positive about Ben Curry. Over to you, Dennis.
Hold on.
Come on.
No, hold on. Hang on a minute. Well, I was trying to push the positivity, but I didn't realise you were going on to Ben Curry. So if we can start this little section about a player's time.
Oh, dear. Right, well.
I do think, I think one of the things is that, and I know it's been mentioned before, we've talked about it before, I think you might have said it, Rob, is that it's time to drop a couple of players at least.
They haven't got anyone left to bring in.
We're not going to sign another 3 or 4
Right, okay. Are you sitting down, lads?
Why, what's going up now?
I'm going to play Daniel's soundbite.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't just Darryl Powell who made the trip from West Yorkshire to Warrington, as fellow Castleford stars Peter Metautier and Oliver Holmes swapped the Tigers for the Wolves. As well as these two, we also acquired the services of Greg Minikin from Hull KR, who used to ply his trade at Castleford under the current coach. All three of these signings, and arguably Powell himself, have failed to make a positive impression in their first year at the club. Let's start with Minikin. Two appearances, both of which Wire lost at home after throwing away handsome leads. In both the Salford and KR matches, he was targeted defensively and found wanting, particularly against Salford. He has offered nothing in attack to say he's a winger, and he has not even come close to scoring or contributing to a try in these two games. Admittedly, a very small sample size, but not great so far. Metautier does not have that same excuse. With 20 appearances, no one has featured more time for Wire this year than the centre, who has also spent time on the wing, at fullback and in the halves. I was excited about this signing. I thought we were getting a destructive and creative centre, one who could defend, score and could play the ball with some instinctive plays in him. We have yet to see any of this. Metautier gets the ball and the momentum of the team immediately stops at that moment. He perpetually runs sideways rather than trying to go himself or feed his winger. Defensively, he has been awful. He is the fifth highest for missed tackles in the league so far this year, and he's also a disciplined machine and has been sin-binned 3 times already this season. With 17 games, Holmes has already had a lot of game time too this season. We have not seen the running second rower who was such a threat for Castleford for the last few years, but instead we've got someone who, like Matautia, never passes the ball or releases his teammates for a break and is a major weak link in defence. Some of his tackling efforts in the recent defeat to KR were downright comical. And yet despite this, Matautia and Holmes are getting picked every single game, and Minikin has been preferred to Conor Wrench for a big match against KR. Clearly, there is some favouritism from Powell to his former Castleford players, because none of these three have shown that they deserve to be on so secure in their places on the team sheet. Three catastrophic signings.
Daniel there describing the signings as catastrophic as Powell's brothers in arms from the Tigers look like they're in dire straits. Where, I mean, I have to agree. I mean, you know, I've just mentioned it. Minikin's been awful. Matautia is just, he's declined from what he was in the first few games to what he is now. Liability. And Holmes, you know, apart from at the start of the season, him sort of getting them all together behind the sticks and telling them off. Very little from Holmes as well.
I like Daniel's wordplay of catastrophic. And I agree in broad terms with what he's saying. I don't think they're necessarily catastrophic.
Oh, we're going to be here all day trying to pronounce this.
Thank God Foolish doesn't play for Castleford.
Yeah, we've brought in what it seems to me, Minikin as a squad player, because that's all he is, by the looks of it.
Why is he playing every week if he's a squad player?
That's what I'm concerned about. And the other two are very neutral, aren't they? They do, well, not even neutral as much as Holmes, but they're very mediocre. And if you're signing people, you're hoping, we were hoping he was bringing with us two players that we saw frankly ripples to pieces in the cup semi-final, and there's not been even a hint of those two players really, has there? Maybe the first two or three games with Matautia, but the drop off back to mediocrity, so sad.
I'm finding myself agreeing with Daniel this week. I mean, I'm usually sort of like, you know, thinking, I missed the wordplay thing completely over my head because I broke down Daryl's favouritism signings. But he did say Minikin, his defence, but he said small sample size. And my mind began to wonder what he meant by that. Matautia perpetually sideways, defence is shit, and Holmes never passes weak in defence. I can't defend these three. I think
Daniel's
right.
He's backed himself into a corner a little bit here because they are his signings. You know, and he should have really dropped them a few weeks ago, and he hasn't done. I mean, I thought it was weird that he all of a sudden Minikin came in for Wrench when Wrench was playing pretty well. And Nicholson had a blinder in the Magic Weekend, yet it was Holmes that stayed in the team and Nicholson disappeared. And Matautia, I mean,
it might be just desperation, though, isn't it? Because sometimes when you really are clutching at straws, you just go into your safest bet. You know that probably Nicholson and... who did you say?
Wrench.
Who's the other one?
Nicholson
Conor Wrench. Both of those do need more games to obviously, you know, up their game. Whereas you go to your status quo experience guys.
These have been the eyes and ears in his dressing room though, hasn't he? He brought them in for a reason. And with all this mess that's been going on and people like Cooper getting his nose out of joint and King wanting to leave, etc. he's then not been able to turn on his own. He can't turn on them.
Yeah.
I said, Rob, last time, that I really respect what Powell's trying to do, but he's played a high-risk game, hasn't he? He's played a high-risk game. I was talking with a friend last night.
Back to the cards.
Almost like for our younger listeners, when Brian Clough went to Leeds United, he said, "You lot,
ruffled feathers.
You fancy Dans, sort your fucking lives out or piss off." And then the player power has actually got rid of Clough. Powell. If you think about it, who we were missing yesterday was Widdop, Williams, Hughes. We've been missing most of the year. Charnley, King, and Cooper. Now, if he'd have potentially handled them different, would we be in a better position if Charlie King and Cooper had been playing week in, week out? I've no idea. I've not got the answer, because, to be fair, we're quite happy that Charlie's gone. We're quite happy that King's gone. And although disappointed from what we hear, it's perfectly reasonable that Cooper's gone. So we agree with all three decisions in the long term, but in the short term, is it cutting your nose off to spite your face?
We were told behind the scenes, and we won't mention who our spy was, but we had it in writing from a certain person at the club, that they didn't realise just how bad the problems were. And they have now all sort of come to the fore. And things have changed under Powell. He's got rid of players. But this now, essentially, is his side. Apart from four players coming in next year who are all the wrong side of 30, this is what he's left with. So, yes, he'll get a bit more stability down the middle of the park with some big boppers out there. But at some point, he can't keep running with this narrative. He's going to be judged on his coaching ability. And I'm seeing no improvement. I'm seeing absolutely, and there's things amongst that team yesterday and the other week that seem to suggest this isn't just about players, this is about the coaching standards are not to the level they need to be at. So as much as he's been a lovely guy, and as much as we've said, yes, these things need to change, and you know, players need to realise it's not a party atmosphere at Warrington anymore, you've still got to start backing that up with results. Yeah. Results aren't there.
On the assumption, and I agree it's not a done deal, the shit that we're playing at the minute, but on the assumption we are in Super League next year, whatever our first six games are absolutely key to Daryl Powell's future, aren't they? Because if we...
I think he might go. I think he might go if we lose to Toulouse.
That is a huge game, isn't it?
If he loses to Toulouse, though, if you know, Cullen came in, and Cullen wasn't the best coach in the world, but Cullen had the dressing room, and Cullen came in when he needed to save the club. And only the other week, Morley was shouting, he's, you know, saying they need to, you know, stop throwing the toys out of the pram, and they need to just grit down and get on with it. I have a funny feeling if we lose against Toulouse, the best thing that could happen to this club would be for Powell to go and Adrian Morley to come in as coach for five games.
And start knocking heads together type of coach.
Morley's not a coach, but he's a good enough coach for five games to get two wins out of that lot by just being in the dressing room as Adrian Morley and saying, right, this has got to fucking stop. Bend your back. Because they'll respect Morley.
Can I ask the other way around then? If we do beat Toulouse, and that's not a given, but if we do beat Toulouse, do you feel that the job's done for this year, and therefore he'll then get his chance at the start of next season?
I definitely want him to get his chance, because we've backed him, we've said there needed to be changes, and he's made those changes, but he's got to back up that with coaching, and that's not happening at the moment. So we'll move on to what we think needs to happen this year. But in terms of next year, I was willing to give, you know, we said it about debt pattern, I was willing to give Powell 10 games next year, but not anymore. I'm willing to give...
Really?
I'm willing to give Powell 5 games next year.
That is not enough at the beginning of the season because you haven't got like this consistency of players' fitness. Yeah, but, 10 games is a good shout.
It is, but Dennis, he will have had 30 games this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I do agree with you too. I'm trying to keep it as positive as possible. I do agree with you that the last run-in now and the amount of changes that we've had and players brought in, there is nowhere else to go. That is basically your team because forwards are just going to rotate anyway next year with the ones that are coming in. So I would say, hang on, don't interrupt.
Sorry.
I do think that he has that run-in now and over the next 5 games, you are looking for 4 out of 5 wins. I think is where we're at, and I get it, but I think whatever happens, as long as we don't get relegated, then I think 10 games next year is probably a better thing because it's just the pressure then and this, that and the other. But yeah, if we've gone 10 games and we're like 50% win rate, then it's not good, is it?
Well, okay, well let's get back to the script because we're getting as discombobulated as the Warrington line here. So first of all, we'll have a look at partnerships. Partnerships, halfback partnerships this year. The worst halfback partnership we have on a percentage is Williams and Widdop at 29%.
Oh, God.
Ratchford and Williams are no better on 29%. Williams and Dean have managed 33% of their wins. Ratchford and Matautier are at 33%. But our best halves this year have been Widdop and Ratchford at 50%. Now, I know stats can be a little bit misleading because they've not played that many games. Mm. But we've got to sort out the halves before we go on next year because Williams is not marquee money. He's been such a disappointment this season. And we haven't got anyone to play alongside him next year. And I know people keep saying, put Ratchford there. Ratchford's not good enough to play in the halves and win as a grand final. Just not good enough. And he's going to be a year older. So I don't know what the solution is.
I think part of the problem is exactly what you've just talked about there. That's 5 different partnerships in just 22 games. I know Widdop.
Do you know who is available and played very well for West Tigers reserves at number 6 on Friday? Oliver Gilshite. Had his best game. He was moved to 6.
From centre to 6.
He scored a try, couple of assists. Maybe.
You know what's worrying about this, Ro, is you put this together and it's almost like looking ahead, isn't it? Is that what we can say is 2022, there's been no consistency in those positions. And we've really not got an idea of what that looks like for next year. And that's like almost like, we're talking about before this season, it was going to be a forwards issue this year. It's almost looking at these halfbacks now and thinking, well, what the hell's going to happen next year? Is it going to be a halfback issue?
Well, as individual wins, not one of them's had more than 20% wins in the halves. So, I mean, Williams has only had 18% wins when he's played in the halves. And the other 4 are all at 20%. So our best half this year has won 1 in 5 games.
Well, let's not keep going on about it. And let's just say, right, okay, then you know who we've got. Who are the halves? Who should be the halves?
Stats on Ben Curry. Do you want some stats on Ben?
No. I want you to say what you think the halves should be. Although, and not just using your stats. But who should they be? Because we've got the players we've got now.
I don't know.
Honestly, would you put Dufty up there?
Yes. Yeah. Based on what Peter Tunk said and what he did when he was playing in the juniors. Yeah, I'd put Dufty there. And what we saw yesterday, put a lovely pass through on Wardle. Dufty can play in the halves. So I think Dufty will end up in the halves because Ratchford's not going to be the solution.
No. What are you, Sam? Where are you on that? Have we lost Sam?
No, for me, with the halves, it's not really so much a problem with ability. Although I take what you say, Ratchford is getting slower. And it's not great to have someone slow now. For me, it's leadership. I've not seen, and this includes Widdop, who I thought would be better. I've not seen anyone actually take a game by the scruff of the neck, even if it's in a defensive way of, do you know what, give me the ball, I'm going to turn them round and put a kick in the corner and just and nothing, just challenge you all.
Nothing.
None of, nothing no one's done it. No.
Nothing.
That's what, for me, is the issue.
I tell you what, we could do with a Paul Bishop now. Gee, we could do with a Paul Bishop. Just someone who wants to actually play footy. Wants to actually be out there biting at their ankles. Oh, dear.
Results, can we pick it up a bit?
Well, here you are. Here's one. Defence. In 2021, we've conceded, I think this is to date, 360 in 22 games, an average of 16.3 per game. Last year, we were our defence... Is this conceded? We're conceding 24.3. Sorry, I've said that the wrong way round. 2021, we conceded 16.3 points per game. And in 2022, we conceded 24.3. And the attack's gone the other way. 2021, our attack was 27.1 per game. Now it's down to 19.9. Which just kind of fits in with the shit season we're having, doesn't it? You wouldn't expect anything different to that.
Yeah. God. I think this is the lowest I've ever felt on any of our podcasts. So I do apologise.
Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this?
Who's listening?
Let's get Ralph on. Where's Ralph?
Yes, where is Ralph, by the way? Every week I ask you where Ralph is, and you keep giving me some bullshit line about, he can't really make it this week.
We have got a special guest coming on in the next few weeks, boys. So.
Have we?
Yeah. Well, just for the patrons.
Oh, I see.
With Rugby League trying to push their way back into the mainstream media, it has been announced Sky Sports duo of Bill Arthur and Stuart Pike will appear on the popular BBC Tea Time quiz show, Pointless Celebrities. Longtime host Richard Osman said he expects the couple will start the show as clear favourites, as both commentators seem utterly pointless. Arthur's family, though, are not new to game shows, with his uncle Charlie once appearing on The Generation Game, and still holding the record to this day of scoring not one point during the conveyor belt round. Following on from the UK's recent heatwave, and with climate change at the forefront of the news, Warrington is set to launch a range of ice pops. The frozen products will be called Meltdown, and feature a series of disgruntled players that have recently departed the club. Leeds 2 looks set to jump on the bandwagon, with a new ice cream. Flaky Blake wasn't available for comment, but rumour has it the new slippery scoop wrecker will be entitled the Miler 69. And finally, the editor at online publication Serious About Rugby League is to appear on Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer's well-loved programme, Gone Fishing. Angling manufacturers Dower and Shakespeare both commended his cameo role, saying no matter what ingredient they place in their products, nothing matches the total shite and utter bollocks produced by Serious About Rugby League's clickbait.
Well, there's the news headlines. Mike Cooper left Warrington early and headed to Wigan. Cooper played for his hometown club for 14 years, breaking up his time at the HJ with a stint in Australia for two seasons with the Sydney and Wollongong-based club, the Dragons. The 33-year-old played 272 games for the Wolves, which included four Challenge Cup winning medals, two of which came from Mike starting at Wembley and two from him being part of Warrington's winning squad. Cooper also appeared in three of Wire's Super League grand final losses. Do you think we should have started the year, Dennis, possibly with Cooper as captain? Would this have changed the way you felt? I mean, we all said at the start of the season that we didn't believe that Jack Hughes was a captain. We put a vote out. We've never had a vote one more sided away from Jack Hughes. No one wanted Jack Hughes as captain amongst the listeners.
We talked about it very early doors about it, and I remember talking about it in one of my monologues that everybody's probably forgotten. And I think it's really difficult to see who the leader is. Like Sam said, you look at like someone like Widder, who's played in the NRL, and I think, you know, we all thought that perhaps he would come in and be a good leader. None of us had a belief in Jack Hughes. It's hard to know what's going on behind the scenes and the obvious issues with Cooper, whether that was part and parcel of it, who knows, or, you know, he obviously thought he wasn't going to be the guy to lead us. So beyond that, when you start looking at the players, like you say, I don't see who's the leader. I mean, I'm looking forward to maybe a couple of these Aussie props coming in with a bit of attitude, as standing, you know, 6 foot five over the referee and saying, "What the bloody hell are you playing out there, Miss Sir?" Oh no, that's
from Kentucky.
Yeah, he started off somewhere just outside Sydney, and he ended up somewhere
Midwest.
Midwest.
Maybe that's what we need. We need a big American and NFL player.
You know, next year, my number one choice for captain. I don't particularly think, you know, the chap's been the best away from the field, but my number one pick would be Paul Vaughan.
You know, he's been thinking of.
I mean, if you go down to St George and just see the magnitude and size of that place in compared to Warrington, like it's like driving up to Manchester United, and they've got an RSL club down the road, which is, you know, enormous bloody place. That is a huge responsibility to be captain of a South Sydney team. You know, we're not talking just 6,000-7,000 fans. We're talking someone who has to be in front of the media virtually every day. He's on the back of the papers, the national papers, every second day. He would be perfect. He would do it with a breeze at Warrington.
Mm. I've got a question on this. Actually, it's only just come to me. Forget Widdop, because obviously he's going to be leaving. But who are our marquee players going to be next year? I know Williams is one. Who's the other one?
I presume Vaughan. I presume. I don't know.
So it could be Vaughan is a marquee player. He's got responsibility, and he looks, like fills my criteria. And to your criteria, Rob, then maybe he's the pick.
Was there a snooker player called Vaughan?
That's a good one. Have we moved into the quiz?
Oh dear. Queensland utility forward Josh Maguire has signed for Warrington on a 2-year deal from the start of the 2023 season. His NRL career has spanned over 250 games, playing 10 seasons at the Brisbane Broncos before a 2-year stint at the Townsville-based club, the Cowboys. He then moved down to the Dragons in 21. Maguire has played 14 games of State of Origin. He's represented the Kangaroos on 8 occasions. He turns 33 in March. Maguire has copped 19 bans in his 14-year career. On a recent interview with Australian radio channel ABC Grandstand, Maguire said, "My past few playing years have been plagued by poor health and from me being overweight and drinking too much. I finished the season last year at 112 kilograms. This year I'm playing at 102. I bumbled my way around the field and fell out of love with the game. I was drinking. I was having fun. I kind of just relied on my past." Sounds excellent, doesn't he? Sounds just what we need.
Ah, well, you know, comes over here, new slate and all that. So that's something to look forward to. Yeah,
I'm Stockton, sure he should be right up his alley, shouldn't it?
You like this?
Are you suggesting?
No, on, I'm saying he's a rogue. I'm saying we need a mongrel in the dressing room.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I think, and he loves the physicality side of the game. I've been watching him the last few weeks. His stats have been fantastic the last few weeks.
He's basically, so. I mean, the only negative is his age, but basically he's your Jason Clark replacement, isn't he? A bit rougher and tougher than Mr. Nice Jason Clark. And so as long as his attitude's right and he doesn't slide off the wagon, then it looks like exactly what we want.
Slide off the wagon. Yeah, you'll have to keep an eye on him, Sam. Who's going to be in the bungalow? Do we know yet? I want to know who's in the bungalow.
Well, Dufty's not in it. He's in Stockton Heath. I don't know who's in the bungalow. He could be in the bungalow, actually. They might put him in the bungalow.
Sam, do you know who's in the bungalow?
No.
Idea. Before he played rugby league, Maguire was a junior hockey player. He was scouted and potentially trialled for the Vancouver Canucks, Dennis.
Oh, yeah. So, excellent.
You know, he likes a fight. He's good on his
feet. Yeah, it's the rugby league equivalent for Canadian sport, isn't it? Ice hockey. So.
And finally, the Warrington Wolves side, coached by Richard Marshall, are now second in the league table following 7 consecutive wins. And to reward the players' talents, 9 of Warrington's Academy's players were picked to play in the Battle of the Roses, Lancashire versus Yorkshire Academy game. So we've always got the talent coming through, haven't we? It's always there. Mm. It's always just a few years away.
never quite comes to fruition. Never quite. Always looks promising.
Isn't it? It's always the same.
And we see, and actually, it remains to be seen whether Thewlis and Wrench, for example, this year, actually make it into more than squad players. But they're the perfect example of people who come up, look like they've got something, and have done over several years and have never quite gone on. You know,
I think's not coming back, Longstaff. Have you seen Longstaff's body language at Hull? He's loving it. He's on Instagram with his new mate. Who's the one that had the air transplant? The dwarf that plays for Hull. Used to play for Leeds. What's the kind of his name?
A hair transplanted dwarf.
Yeah, hair transplanted dwarf.
The halfback.
Played for Leeds.
Luke Gale.
He's on Instagram with him every 2 minutes. When he scores a try, he's pumping his chest again. He's like the total opposite of like the sort of demeanour of Ben Curry at the moment. He's just bouncing around.
Weren't you going to do a section on Ben Curry, Rob?
Professor Brunette expand. Does time, space, reality, and even Bilarthur apply to the laws of physics? Was the Big Bang created by the implosion of hydrogen, helium, dark matter, and the thick matter of Barry and Terry? And just why are none of these properties found in a Benny Westwood sausage baguettes? Will our solar system be attracted to our dying star? Or simply, Tanya Arnold's legs. Is it possible we will find life throughout the galaxy before Ben Thaler's video ref makes a decision? Did Jonathan Thursfield really make 45 first-team appearances for The Wire? Really? Hey guys, there's a typo on this.
Can you just stick to the script, please?
Oh, sorry. Will Matty Ashton ever pass the ball correctly? And if a tree falls in a forest with no one there, or the match day experience takes place in an empty stadium, do they really make a noise? But the mystery of the universe is nothing compared to Warrington Wolves' season. With just 6 games to go, just what is acceptable? Send you my invoice and don't try and pay me in those shitty NFT vouchers again.
Well, there you have it. What is acceptable? 2001 Space Odyssey jingle. Okay, with only 6 games to go in 2022, I'm going to ask you the question, what is acceptable for the remainder of Warrington's season? I'll just run through the timeline of what we've got. Sam's got his head in his hands. Dennis is having another coffee. Why are 6 remaining games start with Wigan away, 6 days later it's Toulouse at home, before an 8-day break to Leeds away. Then it's 6 days to Castleford at home, followed only 4 days later by Huddersfield away. And then 5 days until Wire's last fixture, Salford away. I guess things could change depending on if Sky and Channel 4 come to the fore, but... Well, I'll ask you to predict them, lads, but just what is acceptable, Sam? What you know, to keep Mr. Powell for next season and for us all to go and buy a season ticket, what is acceptable?
Well, the only thing we've got left is a win against Toulouse at home. That's the only thing we've got left. Everything's coming down to that now, because the season is already unacceptable, isn't it? We're in a relegation battle. Or I hear you say those fixtures, and there's only 2 fixtures there that I'm saying we've got a chance in if the opposition play like we think they can.
Turn up.
And that's Toulouse at home and Castleford at home. They're the only two.
Oh, you've not gone Salford away, you're going Castleford at home.
No, if Salford play like they can do, Salford have put points on people at least three games out of four. And I just don't see us upping our game. I see us, like yesterday, I see us scoring a few nice tries and then clinging on to a lead. And so far, we've not managed to cling on to a lead. And I heard, did I hear that Dufty and McKaylee got injured yesterday?
Dufty was limping. McKaylee went off, but then he was on the bike and he came back on.
Right, that's okay then. Thank Cook for that. Because they're the only two carrying me with any real joy at the minute.
Oh, so there's a positive then. That's excellent. Dufty's only played 80 minutes.
McKaylee has been a positive. McKaylee has been a positive. But he's not a long minutes player.
He's not a number six, is he?
No, he's not a number six. He's a 25, 30 minutes across the 80 impact player who gives you some go forward.
He's competent. Mm. He's big and competent at what he's supposed to do, isn't he?
Right, well, I'm going to look at these last six games now. And I'm going to put ourselves in a situation where all of us will probably agree about a few years ago, we would look at them and think, right, we've got two tough matches. We've got Wigan and Leeds probably as the standout teams to sort of like, might not win them, but it'd be good to get a win. The other ones, Toulouse, Cass, Huddersfield, Salford, would almost be saying that they would be a given in when we're doing well in a season. So there would be four games there. I'm like you, Sam, I'm looking at it now and thinking Toulouse is the big game in terms of like, that's the one you've got to win. And then beyond that, I'm like you. I look at Cass and Salford maybe as the ones that you could possibly get another 2 points. So we're looking at 2 to 4 points out of the remaining games the way that we're playing. On a good day, we should be able to get that. But nothing's written down here, is it? What about you, Rob?
Well, I think you're both predicting and not looking at the question, which is what's acceptable. I'm not asking for a prediction.
And what would be acceptable, I think, is what I said at first. I'd look at that and say, oh, we wouldn't get a win against Wigan and Leeds. Toulouse, Cass, Huddersfield and Salford is what I would say is now acceptable for a win. Because like we said earlier on, we said that really now we need to see a run of results. That's the team you've got. You've made the changes. That's what I would say is acceptable. 4 out of 6.
So, Sam, you're saying this season is unacceptable. Then what does the consequence have to be?
Matt, the consequence for me, as I said earlier, is Daryl, you keep us up. And if you keep us up, we thank you for making those difficult decisions. You've now got the lads that you want and you've got some big buggers coming over from Australia. The consequence is you've got half a dozen games next year to show us.
Six games, and
it doesn't have to be six. It could be 7 or 8. But you've got that first little period of next year to show us that all this pain is worth it. That's the consequence. Just looking at Toulouse.
What's your consequence, Rob?
Sorry, go on.
Come on. Let's
think what's acceptable is we have to beat Toulouse. Anything, if we don't beat Toulouse, that's unacceptable and Powell has to go. If we beat Toulouse, I'm more than happy just to see some form of improvement then over the next four games. Just some little light of improvement that says, oh, that's looking a bit better. And then a bit like Sam, then he gets a run next year. But I would put a time frame on next year. I think they need to sit down with him and say, this is it, Daryl. You've got 6 games or you've got 8 games or... Dennis is waiting.
10.
But there needs to be a number. There needs to be some kind of KPI next year that says, once they know the fixtures, and they don't have to set the targets ridiculously high, but they have to say, Daryl, mate, we've given you long enough now. You've got 8 games. These are the games. We expect you to win 5 of those 8. And anything less than that, it's time to go. He's got no excuses. We're one of the only few teams in the entire competition who've spent the cap this year and are going to spend the cap next year. That's just the cap before you go on to the marquee players. Most teams don't even have to worry about marquee wages. They can't even spend the cap. We just mentioned, how are Salford better than us?
Yeah.
Can you imagine where they start, you know, where they're coming from? And we're beneath Salford?
That's why, as a club, we are ridiculed. It's because we spend all this money and we don't get value for it.
But at least, you know, we know that Simon Moran's got the indemnity clause in place with Ralph that we can't get relegated, so...
You're not supposed to tell anyone that.
Oh, you have to cut that bit then.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name.
We're back, checking in on some serial renters.
Oh, hello.
Who had very particular taste.
Oh, hello, it's Warrington Wolves here. Have you got anything that can accommodate 48 props?
There were hits.
Oh, we could put a barbecue in there.
And misses.
Ah, fucking hell. I've just hit my fucking head on that fucking light switch. Fuck!
And plenty of straight shooting.
We won't be buying this.
Oh, no, we couldn't possibly have that. It's north of the river.
You thought we wouldn't find a house and you could stay renting, didn't you?
I really don't mind the bungalow.
Now it's time to see if our aim was true.
Oh, he's kicked it out on the full again. Mister, can we have our ball back, please?
Wow, wow, wow. What a result.
Oh, yes, what an excellent idea it was to ask Channel 4 for that favour. We can now get our overseas signings on their programme. Location, location, location. Location, location, location. Now, Dazzler, have the producers given any indication as to what properties they'll be showing our new 48 props?
Apparently, Ralphie, they're focusing their location, 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 on bungalows in Thelwall.
Oh, dear. Hasn't that turned out to be our curse before, Daryl? I mean, the lump on Gregory Inglis's head from the low-hanging light fitting only went down last week. Yes, I believe it was a bigger lump than when Professor Broomhead wore his Warrington onesie.
That posh lass Kirsty Allstops isn't well, Ralphie. Her magic sponge is playing up. So 10-year-old Naldo from the BBC is filling in. Here she comes now.
Hey up, lads. Let's get this fucking show on the road, shall we?
Shouldn't we wait for Phil Spencer's?
Don't talk to me about that daft bull cunt. Last time I saw that Southern Ponce, he was negotiating a heritage lease with absolutely no commandeering features, and it was way too fucking small to accommodate any form of entertainment.
Well, that's no way to talk about Jason Clark.
Perhaps rather than focusing our search on bungalows, Ralphie, we should go and look for a good semi.
Excuse me, Daryl. I think I did say I'd rather not talk about my night out at the Magic Weekend. Besides, in a dimly lit room, it was very hard to distinguish her Adam's apple.
What about a two up, two down, lads?
Oh, goodness me, turn up the brightness and go to the big screen. Oh, for a second there, Miss Arnaldo, I broke out into a cold sweat. Oh, thinking that your two up, two down was the new Super League relegation and promotion remit.
What about shared accommodation, Ralphie?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Daryl. Last time we tried that, Tyrone Roberts was in his bed set. He went through enough 50p's in the gas meter to sink the Mississippi showboat.
Oh, have you considered a loft conversion?
I do welcome your ideas, Miss Arnaldo. Or may one call you Tanya? But our players' group tend to suffer from vertigo if they climb too far up the ladder.
There's one here in the brochure, Ralphie. Just like that. It's got a built-in al fresco bar. Is it time to change the tinkers, winkers?
Oh, not now, Thomas the Tankard.
Well, it looks like you're fucked, lads. There's simply not enough bungalows in this town to reside 48 props. On location, location, location. Location, location, location.
Oh, Chuckle Socks.
Rather than rent, Ralphie, should we consider making a new long-term residential acquisition?
Oh, yes, that's a sensible idea, Daryl. But we've tied up all our savings in the NFT syndicate. And their share price has fallen quicker than an ex-Warrington scrum half's underpants around the players' wives. Oh, dear, Daryl, what on earth was backroom staff Fitzpatrick thinking, creating a social media bubble? I think he sees himself on that other TV show, Escape to the... oh, dear. Well, that was the first time it sounded appropriate. But do get it fixed, Daryl.
Well. How many times do I have to say well?
You're saying it with a smile.
How many times do I have to say well?
While you find your notes.
This has gone to another level. It's it's like the Simpsons occasionally do with Treehouse of Horrors once a year, where
yes,
where their parody becomes a parody of a programme that was a parody. I like it.
Yes.
Not 100% sure it could go out at 6 p.m. like the Simpsons, with that Aussie saying fuck a lot, and then Tanya Arnold. Who would have thought Tanya Arnold was a potty mouth like that?
Tanya Arnaldo.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, who would have thought? I thought we were getting a lady.
It's funny how you got mixed up, though. Yeah, but it's funny how you got mixed up with our fictitious character.
Yeah.
So do you like it, Sam? You like the woman interest, don't you?
Oh, yes. I like mixing it up a bit. And we have a new catchphrase, but I'm not sure it's quite as good as change the barrel.
No, I know. Don't worry about it. Wait till you were. We've already started writing next year's.
Oh, yes.
We don't have to. I don't have to do this shit next year, do I?
It'd be lovely when we're in the first division, Sam. We'll be winning every week. Your stats will be through the roof.
No, there is a point there. That's a point, actually, isn't it? Yeah. Hmm.
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
Predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Two matches to predict before the podcast returns. First up, it's Wigan away with the Locker Cup up for grabs. The game is live on Sky Sports Arena. The following Thursday, Wire host Toulouse. And with it being a good old-fashioned relegation battle, Sky have decided to broadcast the game. Does anyone know what Locker is? The Locker Cup is? Anyone know what it refers to?
Now, I thought, because I saw the presentation one day, as you know, Rob, we used to work in Warrington and we did our apprenticeship with local firms, that there was a business called Locker. And I remember that. Yes.
Lockers, with the apostrophe S, wasn't it?
Yeah, Lockers. And yeah, and they sponsor the cup. Now, I don't know if it actually originated with them or whether they just took ownership of it. I don't know.
No, they did. It's Lockers is in Farrell Street. They make wire woven mesh, radiant heat shielding and architectural mesh. And yeah. It was just, yeah, a cup sponsored by Locker. That was it. Nothing more.
Because one of the lads we went work with at the apprenticeship went to work there, didn't he?
Did he really? Did he?
Blondair, Blinny, I think they used to call him. Don't know his name. Oh, yeah. Nothing else on that. You look at him. He's sat there reminiscing about, like, he's trying to take his mind off the predictions. That's what it is. Come on, then.
Let's go on to Hal the Computer with the predictions for this week.
Hello, my name is Hal, the Watt Bevan Computer. I'm completely wasted on this shite podcast, as I have an IQ of 20,000. That's 19,850 more than mathematician Hannah Fry. Although I'd be more than happy to dive into her Pythagoras. Here are the predictions for Wire's next two games. Round 22, the pie-eating spineless scum 38, Warrington 10. Round 23, Warrington 22, Toulouse 16.
Well, there you have it, Wigan 38, Warrington 10, and Warrington 22, Toulouse 16. About spot on the money that, isn't it, Sam? We're going to get obliterated at Wigan and then just about beat Toulouse.
I hope so. If you offered me those two scores now, I'd take the pain of the first one to guarantee the win in the second one. Yeah. But it'd be interesting, genuinely, to see what team he puts out against Wigan, because if he's got anybody with a little bit of a bump, do you save them for the match that really, really matters the week after?
Yeah, you have to. Although he's not looking down, he's still looking up.
Well, it's not looking up on this podcast, is it? Jesus Christ.
Oh dear. All right, so you're going a Wigan win and a Warrington win.
Yes. With fingers crossed.
Come on, Rob, you go next.
I got it right last week, didn't I? I said we'd lose to Hull KR and Huddersfield, and we did.
You did? Yeah.
So I am going to say we are going to lose both.
I so hope you're wrong for all of our sanities.
I think that it's going to be c'est la vie. I really think they will come to the HJ and they will throw caution to the wind.
Oh yeah,
if there's one nationality that just will go, let's throw it about and see what happens, and if the shit sticks, and if it does, if they get in front. Do you remember that time? Did we play Toronto? You remember when Toronto...
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah. And it was something like 36-34 in the end, or something ridiculous, wasn't it?
We were losing at one point, and then we came back and sort of... I think we won in the end. But I just think if we go behind in this game, as we've already pointed out, we've yet to win a game this season when the opposition scored first. I think it could get very messy. So...
God... Well, I'm concerned now. I think I'm usually positive. I think, you know, there's a good chance against Wigan just to get the rivals, get one over on the rivals and stuff like that. But I definitely think we'll beat Toulouse. They'll end up being shit.
Okay, that's it. So as Warrington reached 21 rounds, from a man whose 21st seems all but a distant, confused memory away, it's a be seeing you from Sam.
All the best.
And he may not have the keys to the door, but he certainly has the keys to his travelling campervan. It's an all the best from Dennis.
Be seeing you.
I'm Rob London, signing off and sending you all a 21 podcasting gun salute. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Who won the carriage clock, by the way?
Who cares? Who cares?
Oh, God's sake.